Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. Oops, I think Julie Pinsky was supposed to say that. Say it again, Julie.
Hey, good morning. This is Morning Life. This is the Morning Life Show with Garden Life. Oh, my gosh, Julie, you totally confused me.
I know. You know, we're just coming off the annual fun
drive. That's right.
And I think we're a little tired.
Oh, I think we're used to the making things up as we go along, so maybe we're a little better at it.
Maybe so. We're going to improvise today. Not really. We've got a great show planned. Why don't you talk about
yes,
it,
we
and then
do.
I'll do weather.
Yes, we do. I'm here in the studio with Elizabeth Struby and Jen Jensen, and we're here to talk about the state of our gardens. Now, these are two pros that have been on the show a couple of times before, but never together. So today's the day. Good morning, gals.
How's it going?
Yeah. Real good.
Good morning. Good.
Well, a weather report always helps a garden life program, so we'll start with that, and then we'll jump into talking about the state of the garden. Well, guys, I think even though it isn't technically meteorological summer, summer seems to have arrived in Sandpoint. We've got a super nice forecast for the week. Basically, it's the same every day, give or take a few partly cloudy moments. And we're looking at highs in the middle 70s, lows in the high 40s or low 50s. However, on Friday, we've got a little warmer high, a high of 85. So,
ooh.
Creep up a little. Now, that sounds like tomato planting weather, and
I think so.
We're about to get into those very topics.
So I think so. Yeah, it is the time.
Yes, let's jump in.
Snow's off Baldy, too.
All right, that tells us, that tells the tale.
So, Jen here is with the Extension Office, and I was reading a little bit about Extension Centers, and they're a collaboration of local, state, and national government who serve as experts on topics of agriculture, animal production, family, community development, health and wellness, and preparedness. Wow, Jen.
Yes. Well, I can't say that I cover all of those topics. I focus primarily on the gardening end of things and crop production, mostly the fruits and vegetables. But within the Extension Service, we do address all those topics. So we can help connect people to the right person if we can't help them directly in our office.
Excellent. So you're small garden or small farms as well.
Correct.
Yes. So you are the agriculture part of it.
Yes.
All right. Great. And Elizabeth Struby is a master homesteader, and you kind of do the same things that the Extension Office does.
Yeah, at home.
Just for yourself. I mean, the small farm.
Work from home, right?
Work from home. Yeah, how great.
I was actually a master gardener out of the 2022 program, I think. And I've taught a few classes and volunteered at some events, and I can't speak highly enough of the Extension Office. It's a wonderful resource.
So closely connected with them.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. I am, too. I contact Jen quite a bit through the summer. So, Jen, let's start with you. Why don't you share with our listeners what's happening right now at the Extension Office with all of your projects?
Well, some of our recent projects that we have now are a small demonstration garden next to our office. And that garden has primarily been focusing on small fruits. But we did install a hugelkultur style of bed. We had a class where we learned about the topic, which is, it's a German word that really refers to mound culture or mound cultivation. So you're creating a sort of raised garden bed, but it's more of a mounded raised bed that has woody debris on the inside. You kind of start with some larger, ideally, logs that are starting to break down, and then you add on smaller and smaller size branches, as well as compost material and soil on top of that, and then plant into it. So we've been experimenting with that since the class. We have some pumpkins planted on our hugelkultur
mound.
Now,
is this the first year you've had this
bed? Is our first year with it at the Extension Office.
Okay, so you can plant that first year.
You can, yes. And so we'll see how that goes. There's not been a lot of research on hugelkultur beds, But the idea is that with all that organic matter in there, it has better water holding capacity, mm-hmm. so requires less irrigation over the summer. And they have had a hugel culture bed at the university's Sandpoint Organic Agriculture Center up the road from our office for several years now. And that is what they found, that it requires less watering than some of the other beds in their garden.
And I imagine less composting, adding compost, adding fertilizer, really?
Right, because it has better nutrient holding capacity. And as that compost breaks down, it is releasing some of those nutrients, making them available for the plants. It does break down and it does shrink over time. And so it's something that you might not have forever. You might need to rebuild it at some point in time. But it is a good way to add some organic matter to your garden beds and grow in them. And because it's a mound, you can grow on the sides and on the top. So you get a little bit more surface area for planting too.
Oh, yeah, sure. Beds. And Elizabeth, I know when you were on with the permaculture show, mm-hmm. you have that too.
I have done hugel culture there. We leveled everything when we put in my raised beds. One of the things that I really struggled with in a garden of my size, which is a tenth of an acre, maintained by one person, is hauling all of that stuff in there and digging all the holes and everything. If you don't have a lot of heavy equipment accessible, it can be backbreaking work.
Sure.
For a small group of people, for a large group of people, it's really easy. But I also really like the hot composting, that because as it breaks down inside, it creates a little bit of heat in the soil. And when I was temping those hugel culture beds, they were warmer.
Wow.
And the tomatoes and peppers really liked it. So I enjoyed it when I did it a lot.
It worked for you then.
Yeah, for me, it was a great method.
I was just talking with someone yesterday who was just tickled with hers that she built last year and put her hand in there and is all just broken down and beautiful looking compost. So mm-hmm. it's something up and coming.
I would say in our climate, the Sandpoint, Idaho climate, warm soils are a big deal.
Absolutely. That's the reason for raised beds.
Right. We mm-hmm. get things going, and then mm-hmm. all the fruits and the melons and the tomatoes and the peppers, as you've said, that's a great opportunity.
Right. Squashes.
Yeah, squash, yeah. Of course. Now, I will say that the ones I've seen have looked a bit messy. Would anyone agree with that? They're not for the front yard, maybe.
Perhaps not.
No.
And weeding can be an issue, just like any garden bed.
Sure.
So
sure.
you do want to take care with that. And because it is a mound, you do want to be careful with erosion of that compost and soil on it as well. So whether you're mulching, or in some cases, folks will use a cover crop when it's not being planted as the garden.
Right.
Just to help hold it together.
Sure. And is there a class on this coming up, or you've already had the class?
We have already had the class at this time.
Okay. Well, good. There's a lot of information out there, especially under permaculture websites. Yeah. That's a big one.
Yep. The internet is a huge resource for us modern gardeners. Yeah. It's amazing.
Absolutely. So another thing about permaculture is water conservation and mulching. Have you started mulching yet? What's happening with your mulching and water conservation?
I always have mulch on year round. I actually do a deep litter method. And if the chickens get in the garden, it's absolute just wreckage, but because they like to scratch in it. But it retains moisture, mm-hmm. it retains heat. One of the things I struggled with a little bit the last few years was in my garlic beds, I was having a little bit of die-off just on the very outside edges and corners. I think they just got too frozen. But I piled on a couple extra inches of mulch on my garlic last year, and I didn't lose any.
That's right.
It was amazing. And mm-hmm. during the summer, I just scrape it back and plant or sow whatever I'm going to plant in it. And I water a lot less. Stuff does better. Stuff transplants better. It's just a huge advocate of deep litter mulch.
Definitely.
And what is the mulching material that you like best? Is it right? What do you do? What do you like for that?
I use soiled animal bedding for mulch, whether it's alfalfa or straw or hay. preferably seed-free, but that doesn't always happen. Mm-hmm. As we've all had experience, everybody's had seeds come up from hay in their garden. But if you let it sit, let it decompose a little bit. I use in my perennials as well, I use pine bark, pine chips, pine needles, which contrary to popular belief actually doesn't acidify your soil like people think it does.
Exactly.
Well, yes. That brings us to the acidifying the soil, you know, talking about berries and fruit trees and acid soil versus alkaline soil. Let's get into that. Talk a little more about that, the acidic results of pine needles that really doesn't happen.
Yeah, everybody thinks that you shouldn't use pine needles, or but I even use pine cones and bark and chips in my perennials. It makes fabulous mulch, especially for stuff that you're not disturbing a lot. It's free material.
Yeah, exactly.
And people ask every single year in the gardening programs, can I use pine needles? Can I use coffee grounds to acidify my soil? It really doesn't have as much of an effect as you would think. And the studies have shown pine needles don't affect the acidity at all over a period of years.
Yes, that's true. If you do feel that you need to actually acidify your soil, then using sulfur as a soil amendment is probably one of the best ways to amend that.
Are our soils mostly acidic, though?
They do tend to be acidic from the soil tests that I have seen. Mm-hmm. They usually are somewhere between a pH of 6 and 7. 7 is neutral, and then below 7 is more on the acidic side. So they are slightly acidic, but we do have some pockets in the county where you might find some alkaline soil. Mm-hmm. So that is one service that we offer through the Extension office is soil pH testing. We don't do a full soil test at the office. You would need to go to a lab for that analysis. But if you're just looking for soil pH, we can test that at our office.
And can it be done while you wait? Just come in and you'll test it?
It can be, as long as we have someone available sure. to do that. And most times we do. It just takes about 5 minutes to have the soil settle in the water before we can take that reading.
Okay, and what should your soil sample look like? Do you dig down a bit? Do you take a profile? What's the best way, Jennifer?
It's good to sample from the area where the roots will be growing. So usually, especially if you're going to do a full soil test analysis, you would want to go about 10 inches deep and take several subsamples throughout that garden area that you're interested in. For the soil pH, it too is good to have several subsamples, but we really just need about a cup of soil to test that pH level.
Okay. Don't have to fill your wheelbarrow and come in.
No.
Good.
I get a lot of questions about what should I be feeding my fruit trees and my berries, you know, the more perennial type crops. Any suggestions?
Well, it does help to have some sort of soil test so that you know what it is that you're working with. But many times nitrogen will be lacking. And so there are some formulas that you can look at that recommend, for instance, for your apples and pear trees to add about a tenth of a pound of actual nitrogen per inch of trunk diameter. And actual nitrogen, you would want to calculate that from that percentage that is in your fertilizer. We're not talking about a tenth of a pound of fertilizer because that's going to vary. For your stoned fruits, like your cherries, for instance, you can add about an eighth of a pound of that actual nitrogen per inch of trunk diameter.
So that's a little more. They take a little more.
They can take a little bit more.
Ah.
Yep. And you can kind of evaluate your trees, even if you don't do a soil test. Take a look at the growth that they're putting on each year. And if it seems like that's starting to diminish, it's very small, then there's a good chance that there might be some nutrients that are deficient, especially that nitrogen that's involved in some of that shoot and leaf growth.
Okay.
As a home gardener, more on the DIY side of the scale, I do a lot of compost tea. I do a lot of manure. and blood and bone meal, like mm-hmm. any waste from butchering. I'll just pour it in my perennials and
direct nitrogen.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And making, I love making compost tea and worm tea, worm castings. Mm-hmm. We've talked about worm farms. They're awesome.
Mm-hmm. All right. And what is the recipe for compost tea look like? What does that look like for you? How much water and how do you mix that up?
I just put you can take a 5-gallon bucket and you can fill it full of weeds. Anything that is a deep taproot is really good, like dandelions or stinging nettle. You know, a lot of people use nettle.
Mm-hmm.
Just fill up a bucket and cover it with water and cover it with a rock or something like that. Leave it in the sun for about a week and it'll get really disgusting. And that's when you know that it's good and ready.
Comfrey is another one.
Yes, that's
what I use.
Man, that stuff doesn't want to quit growing. You might as well do something with
it. You can heat up your compost and make a tea.
Yep.
It's a great crop. Biochar. I know last year we talked a lot about biochar. What's happening this year with that? Are anything new?
You know, I have not. I'm not aware of anything new, but it is still a good amendment potentially for your soil, especially if you've got soil with low water holding capacity and nutrient holding capacity. So those sandy soils especially.
Mm-hmm.
But they are doing a little bit more research with it as an amendment in potting soil mixes. And I think they've seen some beneficial results from having it not be the sole potting mix component, but as a partial component of those soil mixes.
All right. And for listeners who don't, you know, hear us every single day or every month, what is biochar? What is that stuff?
So biochar is created from burning organic substances around here. Primarily that's wood branches, the slash piles that you might see left over from a logging operation, those can be burnt. And it's a process where they burn it and in a certain way so that it then holds on to a lot of that carbon in it. They extinguish that flame quickly. And then it's almost looks like a charcoal material that then is a stable form of carbon that can be added to your soil.
So this is definitely not wood ash.
No.
Different from wood ash.
Got it.
And it's an old native practice. The Native Americans did that in their gardening, you know, especially probably South America more, where they did a lot more gardening. But that was a native practice. So that's an old technique.
Yeah.
The thing we heard in the permaculture discussion is you have to charge it first.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was very interesting. And I've even found this year, I'm beginning to charge my compost before I put it on because it's dry and it sucks the moisture out of the soil if it's not wet when you put it on. So there's something to that too.
And what is charging for listeners?
Adding some kind of fertilizer.
Ah.
Some kind of moisture too.
And moisture, yes. Mm-hmm. Like your compost tea or some kind of tea, or it has to have a little bit of fertilizer in it, I believe, to to warm it up. Okay, let's talk about plant breeding and research. Jen, you have a current project that's happening now.
Well, we're trialing it's not a full-blown trial, but we have, I believe, 6 different HASCAP or honeyberry cultivars that we've planted at that small demonstration garden. And a HASCAP or honeyberry, if you're not familiar with that, it's a member of the Lonicera or honeysuckle genus, and they create a purple edible berry on these shrubs that ultimately grow about 4 feet tall and 4 feet wide. They are extremely cold hardy down to zone 2, and they're native to some parts of Canada, Siberia, Japan. There are different subspecies within the species of these honeyberries or HASCAPs. So they just got planted last summer, so they're still small in our garden, but it is a potential fruit, small fruit, that could be great for folks' gardens around here because it can it has such good cold hardiness, as well as can handle some of the variable temperatures that we get. So those years when it drops down to negative temperatures in October, like we've seen, or the extreme cold temperatures over the winter. Montana State University is trialing, has a larger scale trial at their research and extension center.
Jennifer, tell us about the berry itself.
Exactly.
Are any of you growing it? What is that berry like? What's it taste like?
I think it tastes kind of like a combination of a blueberry and a grape. Oh. Maybe a little bit more on the grape side. It almost looks like a elongated grape, and it is purple. It's one of our earliest fruiting purple fruits, so some of the varieties are ready to be picked mid to late June. Others are later into the season, July, end of July or so. It is important if you're growing them and you see the purple, or you see the berries turn purple, wait another 2 weeks. Because just because they turn purple, they're not ripe yet and they're not going to taste as good. So wait another 2 weeks before you actually harvest it. They are still a little bit more tart maybe than some of our other fruits. But if you harvest them too early, then they're definitely don't taste as good. Yes. One of the drawbacks of the plants is that they do attract birds, partly because they are some of the early fruits that are available. So birds can be an issue if you've been growing them. You may have experienced that. If you have a way to put up some sort of bird exclusion, some bird netting, maybe over low tunnel frames over the plants or some other structure, that's one way to help preserve your berries from being eaten by the birds.
Mm-hmm. Those birds, they're hungry too, like
they
us.
They are. They need to eat. Elizabeth, what do you have going for a new plant in your garden? Anything new you're looking at?
Salmon berries last year, and I was really looking forward to harvesting some, and they never fruited. So they have some really great growth this year. I'm really hoping they're going to fruit, but all my perennials are doing really, really well. This year, I am going to try some more hot composting for my peppers because I just struggle with peppers so much. But otherwise, the rest of my perennials, you kind of just set them and forget them. As long as your soil is balanced and you amend them properly.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been really interested in honeyberries. They're not that easy to find either.
No.
Because they kind of have a reputation in the permaculture community as being the earliest fruit. On the farm. So I'm really excited to see what your guys' results are.
Yes, we are too.
Yeah, I bet. So let's go to forestry. That was another thing that the Extension office does, and it made me think of tree, or what is it? It's called forest gardens. And that's the trees in your garden that give you produce or fruit.
Right. Forest farm or something like that. And yes, just like Elizabeth was saying, those honeyberries or hascaps are a great addition to have as part of that food forest, as well as other crops like your saskatoons or the serviceberries, another name for those, or your salmon berries or even raspberries, blueberries.
Yes, it's a perennial garden as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. It's those plants that are perennials that you can plant out together. You can have sort of that forest ecosystem where you have the trees and shrubs and ground covers, but you're selecting the plants that provide you food. It's a great way to garden.
One of the reasons why I haven't explored more into that growing style is because of the infrastructure that I would have to put in to enclose an area like that because of the deer.
Away from the animals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The deer are a huge problem here.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, what about, we've talked about the fruit producing food for us, but there's another part, and that would be nuts. What about tree nuts?
Yes, you could certainly include tree nuts into that. So whether it's hazelnuts or walnuts, there's some folks in the area growing chestnuts. There's a variety of different nuts that you could also include.
And I've got a question about the walnut family. I know black walnut thrives here, but has the English walnut been tried? Can it make it here?
I have heard from gardeners in the county that are growing the English walnut.
Wow, that would be fun.
And a hazelnut is pretty hardy as well.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Very hardy. The squirrels really like you in the neighborhood if you have one.
They do. I was going to say that's one crop where I haven't actually gotten any hazelnut off of mine because the squirrels get to them first. Oh.
Well, I got my hazelnuts from the Arbor Day Association. They had a big... I guess it would be a collaboration with a whole bunch of colleges and things to see if hazelnuts could be a fruit crop, or not a fruit crop, a nut crop for small farmers. And they've always been interested in trees, the Arbor Day people. So that's kind of interesting. I had 1 out of 5 survive, and I got 2 last year. Two nuts before the squirrels did.
My goodness. Okay.
It's about 4 feet tall. It's not very big. All right, Elizabeth, tell us a little bit about what's happening with your animals right now. What are your chores concerning your animals?
I had rabbits kindle about a month ago, and I am getting ready to separate kits. We have a grow-out hutch that I typically separate the males from the females and feed them until I will be butchering in about... 5 weeks, probably. So I'll have my first litter of rabbits ready to process. So this is the first year we've done turkeys, and we did a black Spanish heritage breed. And turkeys are not known for being very smart. So I didn't have very high hopes when the hen started laying on a clutch of eggs. We ended up with 12 poults.
Oh.
And from my research, that's like astronomical numbers. So we have these little baby turkeys running around everywhere. I'll probably end up either parting ways with some of them, processing some. We'll see what direction that project goes. But I don't think I'm going to do chicken processing this year. I did like 60 chickens last year, and I burned out. I think I've had it.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
It is. It's a lot of work. I did upwards of 60 chickens and probably upwards of 80 rabbits last year on top of the garden and the canning and everything. I think I'm going to focus on hunting this fall.
Is your freezer empty now? Have you used everything?
It's getting there. We actually had a freezer incident. I lost 2 of my upright freezers and had to process, I think, like 18 chickens into broth, had to do all of my jam in one weekend. And we come to find out, I told my husband, God, these freezers just went out. I'm so stressed out. We just got them. It turns out the dog ran over the cord and unplugged it.
Oh, dear.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, bad dog.
I should have just plugged it back in. I would have gone through a lot less heartache.
Oh,
but
gosh.
It's, you all know, on the shelf now.
It's so true, though. These freezer incidents happen to us all. I've had one over the winter, and my friends had another one with some moose meat in it. It's a tragedy.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Happens. It's full of
the bummer.
Hard work.
Yes, hard work. That's
work.
Right. Hard to say goodbye. Back to the perennial crops, I do need to ask, where am I going to get sunchokes? I can't find the artichokes, the Jerusalem artichokes.
I have some I can give you.
Julie?
Yes, they're in my fridge right
Very
now.
Very good. Okay, I'm going to plant them.
Okay, good.
Have you ever
got them for you.
Planted sunchokes?
I have never
familiar?
Grown those, no.
We do have a small barrel with them in the garden as well, so we could probably share some as well.
Oh, good.
But I will say to you, beware, they're like a comfrey.
Mm-hmm.
Those
yes.
suckers will
yes.
go where you don't want them.
I think when I moved to my house, I think there were some on a corner that I never liked. They got too tall, they fell over. I eventually got rid of them all, and I didn't know you could eat the root.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're quite tasty.
Yes,
I
they
think.
Are. Mm-hmm. They are very good.
Mm-hmm. For me, they have a side effect, which I think is...
Oh, yes, I've read about that side
yes.
effect.
take your gas X is all I can say.
So back to the forest. You don't really do the forestry part of it, Jen.
No, I don't. But we do have a forestry extension educator who comes up to Bonner County on a regular basis to do classes. His name is Chris Schneff. And so he does have a couple classes coming up in Sandpoint. One is on June 13th. And that's going to be on pruning to restore white pine.
Okay.
So learning about the white pine blister rust and how best to manage that through pruning. And he has another class coming up on measuring your trees that will be July 19th.
And would that be for the purpose of lumber production?
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
That blister rust pruning really does save the trees. I mean, it does work.
Yes, if you limb up those mm-hmm. trees, that can certainly help prevent the infection.
Yeah, they did whole orchards with it, and they found it really, really did help.
I took some of those classes as part of the Master Gardener program they have, and I also took a beginner forestry class. If you have any forest on your property, I highly recommend them.
Definitely. There's a lot to learn about forests, which brings us to the Master Gardening class. How many people graduated this year?
This year we had 10 students complete the classroom portion of the class, and now they are in the process of doing the hands-on portion through their volunteer efforts, either at our plant clinic or helping out at a farmer's market table. Of course, we do a fair booth at the county fair each year, and they help maintain that demonstration garden as well at okay. the office.
Is the plant clinic at the extension office then?
It is at the extension office. And the plant clinic is something where anyone can bring in their questions or problems that they're having in their garden. And you can drop those off at any time. And then we have master gardeners in there about once a week to review okay. and research those questions and then get back with the gardener.
And Jen, remind us of the location, the drop-off location.
We're located at 4205 North Boyer, and that's right up there by the fairgrounds. So you'll actually go turn in as if you're turning to the fairgrounds, but you'll see that gray building with a red roof, and that's the extension office.
Can folks call in with a question? Is that okay?
They certainly can, yes. Our phone number is 208-263-8511. And so you can call in with your questions or email. You can email the bonner@uidaho.edu and send photos that can be helpful for that diagnostic process.
I would think so. It's tough to figure out what's going on.
Yes.
With plants.
And the plants don't stay in a plastic bag as well. And they come in a plastic bag, correct?
We do appreciate it when the samples come in a plastic bag, especially if they have insects or potential disease on them. Yes.
Yes. Elizabeth, what classes did you teach?
I did a propagation class as well as a garden planning class, which I feel like these demonstrations end up being more of like an open conversation. They're so fun and comfortable.
They do. And that's something great with Elizabeth's classes and the whole Master Gardener program is there's just a lot of networking and conversations with gardeners. I think like-minded gardeners tend to just get along really well and love to share their information.
That's right. And there's so much to learn.
It's a good place where people can come together these days. Everybody, we're all the same when it comes to gardening, aren't we?
Yes.
I think really we are. Yes. When it's a love, it's a love. And so the insect and disease, let's go back to that. Problems with pests and diseases are a common focus of extension work, but do you also track the health of insect populations at large? And what's happening there?
We have not been doing that through the Extension Office. There are other organizations like the Xerxes Society that has been tracking bumblebees and other pollinators, for instance. And we do have some master gardeners that have helped with those programs. We have just started this year monitoring for some pests. So we have master gardeners throughout northern Idaho that have set up traps for coddling moth mm-hmm. in apple trees, mm-hmm. as well as the western cherry fruit fly in the cherries. So we're trying to get a better idea of when it is that those adults first start flying in the springtime so that you get a better idea of when the eggs are being laid and then when potential control measures should be taken.
Mm-hmm. Do you all remember last year the cherries around here were terrible, and I think it was aphids. Was that?
And the hard winter.
Yes.
Yeah.
It affected all the trees last year.
We had some late frost that just dropped all of our blossoms. So 2 years ago, it was birds. Year before that was the black aphids, the cherry aphids. And then, yeah, late frost. I don't think hardly any fruit did well last year because of that late weather.
Yes. No, it was a tough year for many folks with fruit trees.
Yes. Yes, it was. Things are looking much better this year.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe.
Yes.
Julie, is it time?
I believe so. Our listeners have been so patient, hearing every detail, listening with great attention, but I think you all need a song break. For those of you who've joined us after the beginning of this program, this is KRFY Community Radio for the Idaho Panhandle. I'm Julie Calamine, and I'm here with the show host, Julie Perchinsky. We're having Garden Life. It's once per month, first Tuesday of the month.
That's right.
So if you're enjoying this program, be sure to put it on your calendar for next month. Anyway, I was going to add that if you're catching us midway through and would like to hear the entire program, you can hear it as a podcast later today, which is great for those that tune in a little bit late. And our guests this morning are Jen Jensen from Extension, Bonner County Extension, and Elizabeth Struby, who's just this fantastic homesteader gardener. And you are just a fount of information. And you're so young and you're so advanced already. Isn't it great?
Wow.
And what an adventure. She just took it on, and you've got kids, you've got animals, you've got plants. I mean, you are one busy person.
Oh, pray for me because I've got my husband at home now.
Oh, boy. So we're having a great talk. Off to a short song break. Julie, you picked this one. I like it. It's Brandi Carlile with Emmy Lou Harris, Take Me Home Country Road. Then we'll be back to talk about what's actually happening.
That's right.
On the ground, in the world, in the world. And that was Take Me Home Country Road, not the John Denver version, the Emmy Lou Harris and Brandi Carlile. I liked that song.
I do too.
Yeah, so here we are, KRFY Community Radio for the Idaho Panhandle, the Sandpoint area, and it is Garden Life with Jen Jensen from Bonner County Extension and Elizabeth Struby and Julie Perchinsky and me, Julie Kay.
All right, well, let's go directly to the state of the garden then.
Let's do it.
That's what we'll talk about now. This is just a roundtable discussion, and beginning with what chores are happening in your garden right now. Elizabeth?
I'm about to plant out my tomatoes, which seems really late, but last year we got a frost, I think, like June 7th. So this year's been a little better, but I still get a little scared around those first couple weeks of June. So I'm planting all my cucumbers, squash, direct sowing, that stuff, and getting tomatoes in the ground. We're finishing up some infrastructure because I now have my husband at home with me. We decided, I am working from home, so we decided to bring him home to the homestead to do all my hired hard work. So he is finishing some pathways, and I think the kitchen garden is going to finally be finished this year.
Great. It'd
be awesome.
Your first hired hand, like Julie said.
Yes.
Jen, what's happening in your garden?
Well, I, too, am planting out squashes. I have planted some of my plants already. I do have a unheated greenhouse space that I'm able to plant out some of my plants, like tomatoes and cucumbers, a little bit earlier, and they seem to be doing okay. We do close up that greenhouse at night, so
yes,
it doesn't get too cold in there. Other than that, weeding and mulching, like we were talking about, this time of year, I try to get a really good weeding done and then that nice good layer of mulch on top of it.
And Jennifer, what is your mulch material?
I use either straw, mostly on my vegetables, but on my perennial crops, it's mostly wood chips or bark mulch.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's been an excessively bad year for weeds. I don't know about you guys.
Well, it's been an epic year for growing.
Yeah.
So the weeds are just growing like everything else.
Yep.
I've seen incredible growth this year. I don't know what's happening, but it's fabulous.
And I'm also just getting started getting all my irrigation set up as well.
That's
so
the
that
next
I thing. Am prepared for when that hot, dry weather comes.
Yeah, and that's just, I share a garden with a family, and we're in exactly the same place. The irrigation got going and tested yesterday, and tomatoes are now in under a hot house, not heated, just a plastic, plastic covering over our raised beds. And yes, and some herbs are in because they can be covered at night, but it's just all kind of coming together.
I spend this time of year after my garden's all planted, trimming all the growth back so that the little plants have a chance. So I'm doing a lot of trimming up. I trim up my perennials that get too tall and fall over. I just take the top off this time of year and they branch and then they don't get so tall. And that really helps later on for the chores. You don't have to tie all those perennials up and look and make it look kind of nasty.
Right. You're helping monitoring, you're maintaining a certain height.
Yes, I am. And taking tree branches out that are covering, because you have a finite space. And eventually you start growing up and things grow up. You take the branches off and then plant underneath them and on it goes.
Yeah. Oh, I've got a question for folks with more knowledge than me. Well, these perennials do grow and spread, and I mean, they do have to be divided. Are you doing any dividing now, or was that all done by you in the fall?
For me, it depends on the crops. If it's a fall blooming plant perennial, then I will start to divide those now. But for those more spring or early summer blooming perennials, I'll wait and divide those towards the end of the season. Mm-hmm.
So for me, by the end of the year, I am coming into canning, and I am so burnt out that I let my garden do whatever it wants after about August, 3rd. So we do all of our dividing and propagating in the spring. Mm-hmm. We potted up about 50 strawberries, blackberries, raspberries, digging up those shoots that come up everywhere, and we just pot them up and share them. But I do all of that in the spring. I prune in the spring. Because I'm coming out of cabin fever and I have the energy.
Yes.
Yeah. There's so much to do in late summer and early fall. That is so true. And you are everyone's kind of antsy in the spring. So
right.
If there are things you can do, that's a nice way to plan.
And you are burned out in the fall and it's hot.
Yeah.
It's hot too. So you can't be outside as long.
Early spring is really nice too, because it's still cool and you can do all your pruning and propagating in the early spring.
So we talked last year about the mortality of all the trees, and we spoke today about the cherry trees. What's happened with all the trees that looked so bad last year? Have you seen death, or are they coming back?
Well, we also had that really deep, deep winter freeze 2 years ago, so I saw a lot of die-off in the last 2 years of people who have had perennials for decades sometimes. One thing that I found to be a silver lining was the year that we didn't get any cherries, we decided to do a really hard pruning of our tree, and it is looking fabulous this year.
Great.
So you can turn that year that you may have not gotten any fruit, you may have seen a lot of damage, you can take that year to do some maintenance that you may have been putting off because you still want to get a good crop, right?
Right.
You don't want to prune it and not get maybe a smaller crop the next year. Make that your maintenance year, and you'll reap the reward in the following years.
Yeah, that's a great idea. What about seed saving? We have some time left, but we are starting to run down, so we better cover our last two topics.
Okay.
Seed saving.
Okay. How are you preparing for that? How do you prepare this time of year to save seeds?
Well, one, I think, is just in the varieties that you select to plant this year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are planning to save seed, you want to make sure it's more of the open pollinated varieties, maybe the heirloom varieties, versus the hybrids that you could collect seed from, but what grows from that seed is not going to be exactly what you had planted.
Right.
So that's one thing to consider this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting ready to bag some of my early spring greens. I have kale, spinach, lettuce that are all going to seed. My sorrel is going to seed. So I've got to cut all that down and capture it. But I use a combination of paper bags And organza gift bags actually work really, really well because they've just got drawstrings on them. And I just pop them over like a hat and cinch them up. And then as soon as that goes to seed, I just cut the whole head off and I've got a whole bag of lettuce seed.
That's nice. Very organized. That's a great way to do it.
It is. And except then you catch it.
I throw all your, right now, this second, I have a box of organza bags full of seeds and I didn't label any of them.
Oh, no.
I'm just going to have to plant out and find out what they are.
Which leads us to labeling.
Labeling, yes.
It's very
even
important.
Picking your plant right now. What is your best plant? And putting a ribbon around it and making sure no one takes the head off it.
Yes. Don't feed it to the rabbits. I need this parsnip. This one single precious parsnip.
That's good. So yes, you'll have to communicate now that you've got a hired hand.
She's got a list as long as her arm.
That's right. That's right.
I need to make a sign that says, keep out.
That's right. I use forestry flagging and I label what it is and then all the way up and around. So having the bag on would be a dead giveaway.
I ended up giving my 5-year-old son his own garden. He's got a 12-foot row. This is his second year planting out his own garden because I'm like, you can do whatever you want in your garden. Pick your carrots, pick your tomatoes, cut down your tomatoes. I don't care.
That's fun. Neat. What a fun experiment for that little guy.
Yeah. Keeps him out of my plants.
There you go. Well, all right. We have one last topic that's a good one, and it's coming from Jen, which is Garden for Health Collaboration. Let's hear about that.
The Garden for Health Collaboration is just a group of community gardens that get together to share information about what's going on and try to collaborate our efforts to encourage as many folks to garden or even just come to these gardens where you are able to you pick from the gardens. Some of them have plots that you can rent, but they also have areas where you can just come and harvest some of the produce throughout the season. So we get together and try to promote that. So our little extension office garden has strawberries, raspberries, and eventually we'll have the honeyberries to be available for folks to come pick when they're ripe and in season.
And the other gardens are the community garden.
There are some community gardens through churches,
mm-hmm.
And the through food, the food bank.
Yes.
And so, and there, some of that produce too just gets donated directly to the food bank as well. And gardeners can plant an extra row, or if you just have extra fruits and vegetables from your garden that you're not going to utilize, they can take those at the food bank as well. So mm-hmm. we're just trying to promote getting healthy fruits and vegetables to the families that need them.
Yes, and not wasting it. What a nice idea. Is the library's garden available?
Yes. They're part of our group, but I know they're, I think, working on revamping their gardens this year. So I would check with them before.
I like the collaboration because it's the gardens that's the focus. You know, it's what comes out of the garden for to help the people. And I think that's mm-hmm. a great collaboration.
Yeah. That's right. Oh, this might be kind of a edgy topic, but I'm going to bring it up here at the end.
Oh, please.
It's about the idea and the whole business of gleaning. Now, when the time comes for apple cider and there's all these apples hanging in alleys and over the roads, what do we all think about that? Where is gleaning appropriate and where do we have to keep our sticky little fingers off of stuff?
I'd say it's probably permission.
Yeah. I collect cuttings. I'm kind of one of those person that collects cuttings. I love to cut flowers. I love to propagate perennials. I love to pick apples. I always ask. And sometimes if you just go with a smiling face or you take them some lemonade or whatever, mm-hmm. say, hey, I'd love to be able to propagate your apple tree, or I'd love to be able to pick some of your apples. Can I make you a pie? I've only had like one person say no.
That's of course always the best. Permission and then goodwill.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then produce gets shared and not wasted.
Mm-hmm. There used to be a gleaners group in town, but I haven't heard about them in quite a few years.
I have not either.
Now that Sprouts is gone, he did a lot of gleaning.
Shout out to Sprouts. Yeah. What a great guy. No longer with us. Passed away.
Farm tour, Jen. That's coming up.
That is coming up. It's going to be on June 12th. and we leave from the Extension office. If you are interested in attending, we do ask that you register by the end of this week or as soon as possible so that we know how many folks will be there. And we go to four different farms. This year, we're going up to McPherson's Red Heart Ranch, a beef ranch. We're also going to a research farm that's part of the Young Living Highland Flats distillery and farm, as well as Red Wheelbarrow Produce Farm, and then Shingle Mill Blueberry Farm. And there is a lunch served as part of it that's done by the Bonner and Boundary Cattle Women's Association. So if you're interested in attending, contact the Extension office. We can help with the registration. And again, our number is 208-263-8511.
Give us more information about the Extension office, since that's kind of where we are with our interview this morning. Again, the email and the address.
All right. Our email to learn more about any of our programs is bonner@uidaho.edu. And we're located up by the Bonner County Fairgrounds, and our address is 4205 North Boyer in Sandpoint.
All right.
All right. And we won't give out Elizabeth's address because you don't need folks coming to visit, but you will occasionally be teaching classes so people can run into you there from time to time.
Yes. And I do post a lot of information on my website about gardening and our northern climate. The homesteading convention is coming up in Coeur d'Alene. That is always really fun, especially for people who are looking to learn new skills. And again, I post recipes, gardening, animal husbandry on my website. It's the Whistling Rooster Homestead. And I got my garden planner published.
Oh, you did?
In print and digital is available.
Oh, my gosh.
All right.
And congratulations.
That will be found at your website.
Yep, whistlingroosterhomestead.com.
All righty. Congratulations.
That's fantastic.
Thank you.
All right. Jen Jensen from the County Extension Office and Elizabeth Struby, Master Homesteader, here to talk about State of the Gardens. Thank you so much, gals. What a great conversation.
Have a great Tuesday.
Oh, you thank too. You. It goes so fast with these two.
I know it.
We've run out of time, and it was a great talk. Thanks so much. All right, everyone, listeners, here we are at KRFY, listener-supported community radio for the Idaho Panhandle. If you weren't able to make your membership renewal last week during our membership drive, you can still do it. Go to krfy.org and look for the Donate tab. You can mail it to us at P.O. Box 2465 in Sandpoint, 83864. You can call and we'll call you back. That's 208-265-2992. Just leave a message and we'll get back to you. So lots of ways you can do that. And we sure hope that you will become a new member if you're not one, or renew your membership, or become an underwriter. That's a fun way to go too.
All of the above.
That's right. All right. Well, we don't even have time for upcoming events, Julie.
Oh, my goodness.
We used our whole hour, so we'll be going out with a song, and it is going to be John Prine, Everything is Cool.